Next, 1320 WIL. So the Tiger Woods story, did you see that? He got pulled over with DUI, was arrested. Well, it turns out he had a 0.000 blood alcohol content. It turns out that what was making him, well, what made him fall asleep at the wheel right at a stoplight was his painkillers. Joseph Awad is with us. He's one of the most experienced Michigan DUI and OWI criminal defense attorneys. Find him at LegalWinds.com. Joseph, it is great to have you on WILS.
It's good to be here.
I'm curious, so in Michigan, does that change anything if you end up not having any alcohol in your system, but it was actually a painkiller you're using as a medication? Does that change your case somehow?
You know, the law really treats alcohol and drug driving cases virtually the same. If you're taking any kind of illicit substance, whether it be alcohol or drugs, and it affects your ability to drive, you can be charged with the equivalent of a drunk driving for the use of drugs.
Okay. And do the courts tend to treat the cases similarly once you get in front of a judge?
You know, there's a larger stigma with alcohol and driving just because it's so pronounced and so well known. But drug driving is virtually treated the same, and the courts tend to treat them the same, too. The real question is, what was in his system to cause him to drive the way he drove? And that will have some bearing on maybe how the courts treat it and even how the media treats it.
In terms of whether he was actually prescribed the medication, you're saying?
I mean, it's the equivalent of drinking too much despite the legality of the alcohol. So, you know, if he's taking, you know, strong stuff like, you know, painkillers for his back, whatever, he can't even have that stuff in his system and drive, let alone take too much of it such that it affects his ability to drive. Mm. So it'll be interesting to see what the urinalysis report with if they even release it. Go ahead.
It's a high likelihood of what?
There's a high likelihood that the drugs in his system were, in fact, drugs that shouldn't be there at all when you're operating a vehicle, okay, even if it's in a prescribed dose. But there's a high likelihood, if he's that far out of it, that you can make the argument very easily that he might have been over-medicating or what have you. But I don't know that for sure. I'll know more later.
So Michigan criminal defense attorney Joseph Awad, one of the state's top DUI attorneys. What percentage of your cases would you say are these kind, where it's medications versus alcohol?
Well, you know, often, I frankly, it's probably one out of every 10 alcohol or drug cases. Drug cases are far less common, oftentimes because they're a lot harder to notice. But if you're on the side of the road with flat tires and scraped paint and the rest of it, it's pretty easy to put two and two together. But the overwhelming majority of these cases are alcohol-related, but there's a large number, an increasingly large number of drug-related cases. I just dealt with one a short time ago. So they're not at all uncommon anymore.
And so what happens? Because I know with DUI, what, you can't drink for a long time. They might put some kind of machine on your car, right, to check your breath. What do they do with these drug cases?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because the court is not going to prohibit him from taking his prescribed meds. But what they will do is probably ban him from drinking, because oftentimes if you're abusing drugs, the presumption is you're abusing other things. And if that's the case, then they'll order him not to consume alcohol. Whether he does or not is irrelevant. But they will order it, despite the fact that this case probably had nothing to do with alcohol at all.
Okay.
So, and you're looking at, I mean, it's oftentimes probation and outpatient counseling, things of that nature. So they have to assess if, in fact, he has a substance abuse problem, which the court will do, and if they've made that determination, then his probation will try to address that issue if it exists.
So if you're defending a drugged driving case, I mean, are the tests so accurate that they can tell exactly how much medication was taken, that kind of thing?
Well, that's actually the difficulty with trying to prosecute these cases. The officer has to first make a determination that, in fact, drugs was a factor, and number one. And number two, they have to assess whether or not the drugs were such a factor that it actually caused the accident. If they can jump through those hoops and validate their arrest, then the toxicology report is going to say everything. But, I mean, you can take too much Tylenol and have it affect your driving.
Mm-hmm.
So the officer really has to make a determination whether or not, A, drugs were taken, and B, if so, whether or not they were taken improperly such that it would cause him to drive, you know, the way he did.
Okay, because as a defense attorney, you could argue that he was just tired, right?
Well, you can argue it, and oftentimes the argument is made, and it's oftentimes true, but if you take the totality of the circumstances, they have to make an assessment as to whether or not, other than fatigue, is what caused the accident. And that's what they do when they validate an arrest, or at least attempt to. If they can't validate the arrest, if they can't draw a clear nexus between the drugs he took and the way he was driving, okay, then the arrest itself becomes invalid and the case can kind of crumble. But I've read the preliminary reports regarding his situation, and there's a lot of collateral facts that support the fact that his drugs, his taking of the drugs really screwed him up. But not to mention the fact that he made the admission, which he should have never done, but that's a separate story.
Interesting. He should have never done that. Well, you're saying what? If you are clearly affected, you should tell the officer essentially that, look, I've not taken any medication?
Well, from a legal point of view, you're not to tell the officer anything. And the fact that his judgment may have been impaired probably speaks volumes to the fact that he was just saying all sorts of things that in hindsight he should not have been saying. And that's from a legal perspective. Because that admission is going to be used against him. It's already made its way into the police report.
So he should not have, and what about the field sobriety tests? Because he took a bunch and failed them. Should you say no to those also?
Yeah. You should never take any field sobriety tests of any kind. You can politely decline to take those. Mm-hmm. There is no law requiring you to say your ABCs or walk a straight line or anything else.
That means you're going to jail, though, right?
Well, it means that you may be arrested, but if they arrest you despite the absence of that information, despite not giving you those tests, then they have a lot less information to validate their arrest, and your attorney can go back and say, hey, you know, where was all the information supporting this arrest before you put handcuffs on him?
Interesting.
And if the answer is it wasn't there, then the arrest is invalid, and any subsequent results of regarding, you know, drug or alcohol use in excess becomes inadmissible.
Okay, but so, it sounds like you shouldn't do the breathalyzer, but if you refuse a field sobriety test, they're taking you to jail, right? There's no way he's going to let you drive away, is he?
Again, they oftentimes, you know, when people refuse the field sobriety test, but the officer still has a hunch that someone is drunk or taking drugs in excess, then yes, they can. Oftentimes, you're going to get arrested anyway, but the officer is going to have to go back and justify why he thought these things, despite the fact that there were no field sobriety tests to measure, you know.
Joseph Awad, one of the most experienced Michigan DUI, OWI criminal defense attorneys. You can find them at legalwins.com. Legalwins.com. Joseph, thank you very much.
Thank you. Take care.